Welcome once again to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug DeFeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you in studio today, and welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Our topic for today is coaching, step one, cultivating client self-awareness. And we have with us here in the studio Mike Thompson. He's going to talk about that. Mike is a military veteran with an MBA, a master's in industrial organizational psychology, working with one of the 100 fastest growing companies in Los Angeles while completing his doctorate, and at the same time writing his first nonfiction book on the demerits of our society's focus on simply meeting performance goals in lieu of truly mastering whatever we undertake. Boy, I'm intrigued with that, Mike. We're going to have some fun with that statement.
I think so.
His coaching interests are in helping others identify their true selves, their strengths, their needs, their motivations, and combining those to make goals clear and goal-directed behavior rewarding and motivating in itself. Mike is currently leveraging the power of the internet to satisfy this interest with MicroMentor, a nonprofit all-volunteer consulting platform that pairs experts with those in need of support, and I'm interested to hear more about that too. Well, a little background, Mike was raised on a working quarter horse ranch with his father, stepmother, and older brother in a small town of Placerville in Northern California. Heard about it? He's married, has four children, currently lives in Beaumont, California. He's a U.S. Navy CB veteran who was deployed to the Middle East in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom in 2004. He holds black belts in karate and kung fu, was a military close quarters combat instructor while in the service, and is an avid outdoorsman and hunter. So, engineer Paul and myself are on our best behavior today. This is one guy we don't want to tick off. He'd take us both with both hands tied behind his back. Mike, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Thank you, Doug.
You know, I don't normally go into that much background, but you have such a fascinating background. And besides that, I think it's indicative of the way in which you approach life.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure how it turned out to be so fascinated, except that I'm fascinated with so much myself. And I'm just really curious. And now, I wasn't always that way, but you know, over the course of my adult life and realizing I needed to get back into school, you know, get to here and get to there, I just found more and more subjects that interested me and more pleasure in like diving into it completely. And here I am.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background here.
Well, I have since soon after I graduated from high school, I've been in the building industry, and I've been managing construction pretty much all my adult life since then. As a superintendent and project manager, I owned a small contracting firm for a little bit. Getting into the military, I did basically just because I had an interest in it. And I thought, well,
you couldn't just be satisfied with reading about it?
Yeah, I couldn't be satisfied with reading about it. I always kind of had this feeling like, well, maybe I should have joined the military when I got out of high school instead of getting married, which turned out to not go as well.
We won't go there.
We won't go there. After the military, or actually during that time, as I first went into the reserves, because I was already working, I was already a general contractor. That's why I went in as a CB, which is the Navy's Construction Battalion. Then I started getting more into martial arts, which I had started in high school, but never quite got to the level that I got to, you know, 10 years ago, probably when I got a black belt. You guys don't really have to be that afraid of me right now, because I haven't probably practiced too much for at least 5 years.
Okay, good.
It is something you probably should do all the time if you're going to be good at it. Got a black belt. Once I ran a marathon, once I had, you know, done a few things successfully, I kind of thought, well, I've kind of always wanted to write a book. Maybe I should try that. You know, of course, none of these things are like, oh, I'm going to try this and I'm great at it. You know, it took me, you know, high school before I could drive to, you know, 25 years old or something before I got my black belt. It took me, 5 years of attempts where I got into the middle of writing a book and finally just got to a point where I was like, you know what? This doesn't make sense anymore. Throw it in the trash, start over again. So, you know, it's not any kind of instant success thing, but it's kind of, you know, learn as you go and do your best with it and keep figuring it out and apply a little bit of learning you get from this or that to the next thing. Like it helped me obviously to once I did write a book successfully and that one I started with, you know, a simple line that I thought was going to go somewhere, and I just let my imagination go crazy, and I ended up writing, you know, 65,000 word book in 30 days.
Wow.
So after that, you know, writing a master's project for my MBA, it doesn't seem like as much work. Yeah, you know, or, you know, doing my master's project for my MSIO doesn't seem like that much more work. So it's kind of a perspective thing, and it's kind of, you know, here's what I've learned about how to write freely. Don't overthink. Don't do all the research while you're doing the writing. You know, that kind of stuff. I've kind of adopted the philosophy of, you know, and this is probably over the course of 10 years and now going into another 10 of having the philosophy kind of straightened out in my own head, at least, of just whatever I want to learn about or whatever I'm interested in, don't just read about it, go do it. So
you know, and that's what really intrigued me. You know, as I read the list, there's a much more extensive list Mike shared with me, and maybe he'll read it to us. I think it's really humorous, but what intrigued me was the fact that we all are interested in lots of things, and yeah, we sort of dabble in them, and we're not instantly successful, and we move on to something else. But you've got this ability to stick with it until you get some sort of success with it. I don't, like you said, maybe you're not great, but you have some success with it, and you know, I think that's lost today. We are all looking for instant success, instant gratification.
Yeah, so that's kind of my issue with kind of the thesis of the book I'm writing now that you talked about for a second, about the difference between a performance orientation or a mastery orientation, or what, you know, a lot of people might read as or see referred to as a learning orientation.
Okay.
You know, one is, I'm going to learn this because I like learning, and the other is, I'm going to learn this or do this because I want the diploma at the end, or I want the job that comes with it, or whatever. There's a little bit of a difference in the way people approach things, mostly because if you, all you're thinking about is trying to get to the diploma, it's like, okay, I got to write 100 words for something. So here's 100 words, whatever it takes, however meaningless they are, and turn it in, and, you know, do that however many times and get your diploma. Or if you're going to school because you're interested in whatever it is, you're reading on your own, you're listening to podcasts about the subject, you're writing on your own, you're doing all this other work, you're going to end up more successful than the person with the performance orientation who's just after the look what I proved I can do, because you're going to learn 10 times as much as that person, and ultimately you're going to have higher performance in the end because of all that.
Well, and I think you hit it on the head when you said it's all about mastery. You know, that's almost a term we've lost in current society. We learn things. Data is available. Information is available. I can understand, not really learn, but understand something relatively easily, relatively quickly. But to actually execute it and, in fact, become reach the point where I can master it, that's a whole different level of commitment. And that's
different.
What you're getting to, isn't it?
That's what I'm... Yeah, that's... See, I guess an important part of that orientation, and I think why I'm... Yeah, I learned it as performance oriented or mastery oriented. You know, out of whatever textbook, I started to gain an interest in these, you know, achievement orientations through. But I prefer somewhat the term learning orientation, just so I don't sound so arrogant or so ridiculous if I try to explain it to anyone. Like I'm never going to say that I'm the master of anything. Like, oh, I wrote and self-published a couple books. That doesn't make me a master author, or yeah, I have a master's degree in IO psychology or in business. That doesn't make me a master of those things, although an institution that says it does. It's kind of accepting that you're never the master of it. That's what keeps you learning. Like, you know, I got to this point, let's say, my IO psychology master's degree, I finished kind of recently.
Okay.
And I took some risks on my master's project and connected some of my own theories, like from the book I'm working on and whatnot, into the project, and got a little bit criticized from, you know, panel of doctors reviewing it, who were saying, well, where'd you get this from? Where'd you get that from?
you weren't regurgitating something they already knew.
Exactly. So at first, and this probably would apply to anyone, like at first, like, how dare you? Like, how can you not see how this makes so much sense? But, you know, I have to remember, okay, I did this for a reason. I took a risk so that I could see if this makes sense to a panel of doctors. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? What can I really learn here? What have I learned? Am I putting things together in the right way? So it was good to be criticized and get over my hurt feelings for a second, and look at comments on, hey, this paragraph here is, you know, you're going a little too far. You're going a little farther still, but the end is good. It's like, okay, well, it's not really so bad. So I have to, you know, work on my logic a little bit to get to this point. But if you can see the logic, then it hasn't been a completely wasted learning experience.
Okay, all right. And I think that's what that's an interesting background. Tell us about what you're doing now. We'll get into the rest of this later. But what's your business now? Give us a little bit about what you do and how does that work in with your interests.
Well, I've always had an interest in building. So professionally, day to day, I manage construction projects. And they're high-end, high-rise remodel projects for the most part. I'm not going to name the company.
You can name the company.
Yeah, it's HBC, who's a local company here, and we have an office in L.A. that I work at also.
Highly respected company.
Yeah. Very highly respected.
I know the name.
Company. So I work out of our L.A. office there, and then kind of my side projects are my, you know, PhD dissertation that I'm about 2 years into messing around with it and now starting to get serious with it.
Okay.
I'm working on my third fiction book and my first nonfiction book. And then I'm doing whatever else I can to kind of test my knowledge as an IO psychologist and as a coach with MicroMentor. That's how I approached going to them in the first place when I first found out about them. Was kind of, well, I've got, you know, 23 years in a business that's extremely complicated, and I've got a lot of management experience and a lot of education, and I can probably give someone who's starting out some good advice. And then secondarily, as this is a consulting psychology degree focused on, you know, business consulting, well, why don't I go give away some kind of free advice, basically, and see where I'm at, see what I need to work on, you know, work with a few people, let's get some feedback, and, you know, if this progresses into some point into coaching full-time or the way I kind of picture it as, I'm going to retire from building at some point, but all I want to do ever is work. If I'm at home, I'm working on schoolwork. When I need a break from schoolwork, it's to mow the lawn or clean the pool. So I'm not really happy just sitting around. So I know I'm going to go do something else. So, and I'm thinking consulting, teaching. So let's go figure it out.
What attracted you to the coaching end?
Really what attracted to me to that in the first place was a mentor that I had when I first started trying to get into management in the building business. He was just incredibly helpful to me. He gave me a lot of, you know, great, even if simple, advice that I've taken with me here the last 20 years. And then I've had a chance to mentor a couple other people and help out an intern we've had up at our office. And I've done some training programs for another company that I used to work with. It's enjoyable to me to kind of help people to overcome something that they're struggling with, when the way I've done it, the way I've kind of taken my, as a kid, to be honest, like low self-esteem and a very external locus of control and really low efficacy. Like, I had no idea what I could do. I was, you know, practically flunking out of high school and finding some direction and getting completely carried away with it, obviously, as my life progressed on. But kind of taking what I've figured out, not only in school but over the last 20 years, and trying to help junior guys at work to get, you know, to the next step in a supervisory role or whatever. I always liked kind of being able to, like, hey, let me save you 20 years. You know, here's what you should be thinking about. Let's evaluate your strengths. Let's figure out, you know, what your weakness is. Like, a lot of people, they might struggle with, including me, evaluating themselves. I know that's kind of a topic on the release about the show there. That's probably the core of really having kind of a higher value self-esteem, where it's not just, you know, how do I compare to Doug as a podcaster? You know, not very well. I'm not the greatest public speaker. You know, we talked a little bit before, like, I'd really prefer to write, where I can keep my thoughts organized and whatever. And part of knowing your weaknesses is like, how can knowing it help you? How can it help, you know, the team you're with? Like, before the show here, telling you, like, hey, if I start to get a little sidetracked, like, you know,
you did.
Wave at me or whatever. Like, I know when I get talking, I'm going to start rambling. I'm going to connect this point to that and whatnot. And who knows where I'll end up. And I think I've already done it once, where I'm like, let's sit in silence and you can, you know, just point me back in the right direction. But those are kind of how I got going this way, and then developing kind of, you know, my strength of my strengths being like curiosity, willing to learn, willing to put forth the extra time, being just, you know, big five personality wise, conscientiousness being my major trait. Like, I can't sit still. I have to be doing something. Like, it's good to identify those and kind of put them to use. And it's good to know what your weakness is and kind of be aware of them, so I can realize, like, you know, I've done one other podcast interview once when I released my first book, whatever, 5-7 years ago.
You mentioned that to me.
It didn't go terrible, but I remember it as kind of terrible.
So, well, don't remember this one as kind of terrible. You're doing fine.
Yeah, so you want to be aware of, you know, what's happened to you. You know, what does it say about you? What do you need to do about it? Like, do I need to spend a little more time thinking about it? Do I need to review some notes? Should I listen to the show on the way in? You know, can I get prepared for how you sound? How the show sounds? How am I going to sound on the thing? Like, every little thing you do to cover your known weaknesses, it's not going to be so bad, right?
Right.
So hopefully, right. I will listen to this later and I'll think, oh, okay, it's not so bad.
Hey, I've been doing it for 6 years. I listen to it and I go, oh, man, when would I stop laughing or giggling or whatever, you know?
Nobody likes sound of your own voice.
Yeah. So tell me, before we go to commercial, we ask everybody this. What's your guiding principle? What sort of is the theme that you live by? And I think you've already touched on it, but I want to just spell it out here for the audience.
Yeah, it's kind of a self-knowledge, self-awareness, and just continuous learning. It's the learning orientation we've been talking about a little bit. It's having a growth mindset instead of a fixed mindset. You know, these are, it's almost hard to believe that anybody would have a fixed mindset.
Like, not really.
To me, when you think about it logically, it's like, well, you know, at one time in your life, you couldn't talk, right? And you learned how to talk. So why do you think you can't learn how to talk better? But that's, that's the guiding principle, is kind of, this is my one life, and what can I do with it? How do I get the most out of myself? And how do I not, have regrets at the end of it? I can look and say, I did my best, I tried my hardest, all that.
What, just out of curiosity, how do you learn best yourself? What's your method for learning? Is it doing? I mean, if I look at your sort of resume, it sounds
I would say it's doing. Like, I know we're joking a little bit earlier, or we're talking earlier when I talked to you about, I have an interest in drinking, so I went to bartending school so I could learn how to do it right. Or after seeing the random Discovery Channel shows about the Freemasons and, Illuminati and all this kind of stuff, I was like, well, I'm interested in that. So I became a Freemason and, went through the lodge and became a Master Mason and satisfied my curiosity. I honestly haven't been for a couple of years, if anybody listening is a Mason.
You don't need to confess anything on this show.
But, it's kind of a total immersion thing.
Yeah.
I think that's the way, it's certainly the way I get the most out of something, like whatever I'm doing for my dissertation, I'm using at work every day. It might sound funny, like, hey, you work for a general contracting firm, like, how are you using organizational psychology or psychology in general? Aren't you, hammering drywall to studs or something? Not exactly from a management perspective, but what did I read last week that made sense about how I present something to somebody when I go talk to this guy about some criticism or something? Like, how's it going to help him? How's it going to hurt him if I don't put it the right way? Like, kind of use whatever you learn, keep it active, get somewhere with it, bring all of the things you've learned together. Some of these don't quite fit the everyday thing, like, bartending, but most of the rest of
it. But it follows the pattern of how you like to learn.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it fits somewhere, and it all fits together somewhere.
All right. So we've got the background taken care of. Let's take a quick commercial break. Then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about our major topic here today.
All right.
And we're back, and we're talking today to Mike Thompson, currently working in the construction field, simultaneously coaching using micro-mentoring through the internet, and a dozen other things that he's involved in all at the same time. Multifaceted person. Mike, it's been very enjoyable. I can't let this go by. You've covered some of this, but I just want to share with the audience. Mike, before the show, sent me a list of some of the things he's done, and the way he wrote it out, I have to tell you, it just was humorous reading it.
Yeah, I was better at writing.
Let me just share this with the audience. When I asked him, who are you? He says, like a lot of young men, I was curious about martial arts, so I started training and stayed until I got a black belt, and then started teaching in the military. I was also curious about the military and the CBs in particular, so I joined up and went to war. I always wanted to try writing, so I tried for a few years, eventually wrote, published two novels, working on two more books, one nonfiction, about the benefits of abandoning a performance-oriented society. I also saw an advantage to better understanding people and their motivations in business, so after I completed my MBA, I started in on a master's in psychology, just completed last week. Like many people, I was fascinated with the Freemason, so I became one and satisfied my curiosity by becoming a Master Mason. I've always been interested in building, so I became a general contractor. My interest in sustainable building led to joining the U.S. Green Building Council and becoming a lead AP. I wanted to lose weight at one point, so I lost 67 pounds on my way to becoming a certified professional trainer and going to work out at a gym for a time while learning how to. On the lighter side, I don't mind a few drinks, so what did I do? I went to bartending school, of course, so I could learn how to do it right. With all of these varied things have in common is that they are simply my interests, and although I cannot say for sure, I am working under the assumption that this is my one life to accomplish everything I can. And for that reason, I started working on my doctoral dissertation tomorrow. I just loved it. You know, I shared that with a couple of people, and they were just fascinated with it. And you know, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at Mike's way of learning is so, your way of learning is so different from so many people today. We are a browsing society,
yeah,
on the internet, looking at page after page, hour after hour, and we close the browser and think we've learned something. But you are all about immersion into it.
Yeah, true. Now, the funny thing is, most of the time I think of myself as browsing, and I don't have near as much knowledge as I should, and you know, I should watch what I say in this context or that context, because I don't have exactly the knowledge that I should to speak about, you know, this, that, or the other thing. But that's part of the learning orientation.
It's, yeah,
like, I always feel like I should know a little bit more. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, whatever piques my interest in something, I should, you know, learn a little bit more about it.
Okay, let's talk a little bit. You know, when we talked about the show ahead of time, we told our audience that tune in, you're going to learn more about how to work with your clients to develop their HVSE, high-value self-esteem, based on self-efficacy development and self-concept clarity, SCC, as opposed to self-esteem in the usual sense of, you know, I had to read that sentence over and over to make sure, did I leave some words in or add some? Because it's not easy to understand. What are you talking about there?
Well, the thing is, you know, there's probably a bunch of words left out there, and maybe I'm focusing too much on one or the other, because all psychological constructs are very complicated. You know, that's kind of what interests me in psychology in the first place, and kind of where I'm going with my dissertation is interactive effects and mediating and moderating effects, like how your self-esteem works, how you learn anything, you know, all of these things, you know, play on each other, and what your mood is, and where you're at, and who you're in front of, and it is extremely complicated. That's why it sounds complicated.
Okay, good. It isn't just me.
Yeah, it isn't just you. So we talked about it a little bit before the break, but, you know, the usual sense of self-esteem is kind of a comparison to others.
Yep.
Like, I feel good about myself because I've got a two-story house and my neighbor has a one-story house. I'm better. I can, you know, hold my head up high, whatever. And the difference between that and what I've started referring to when I started piddling around with my dissertation 2 years ago, as high-value self-esteem and basing it in self-efficacy and self-concept clarity, which are self-efficacy is basically knowing what you're capable of. Like when I go to work every day, do I pretty much know how it's going to go? Am I good at my job? Am I good at this or that? And it's your expectation of success.
Okay.
If I, you know, try to walk through that door, do I expect to be able to do it? Yeah. So I have a high efficacy about, you know, walking through the door.
Sounds like something most all of us have.
Yeah. Yeah. So everybody has, you know, some things that they're good at and they expect to do well at, and some things that they're not good at and don't expect to do well at. The difference between like high-value self-esteem, self-efficacy, and the normal conception of self-esteem, which everybody, you know, when I was a kid, it was everybody should get a trophy because they came out to the Little League game,
yeah,
whatever. You know, we got to get these kids' self-esteem up. The problem there, and why I don't think it's high-value, is it's not based on anything. It's really just based on I have a trophy and the kid in the car next to me driving home doesn't have one. It's not because you did anything. It's because you know, your parents brought you to the game and you got a trophy.
Yeah.
So, you know, my two-story house can be reduced to rubble. If I'm basing my self-esteem on the difference between the height of my house and the height of my neighbor's house, then, you know, what happens when it's reduced to rubble? There's an earthquake when, you know, I lose my job and I can't keep the house anymore, or whatever happens. It's not good to base, you know, your self-worth, your feelings about yourself on what other people think of you. But that's... Now, the thing is, this isn't something we're teaching people to do or we set out to do. It's a natural thing. You know, you have some basis of reference, other people, the house next door to you or whatever, that gives you a feeling of, am I doing pretty good or doing pretty bad? So if you're basing this sense of self-worth on, you know, knowing why you're doing pretty good or doing pretty bad, or how you can do better and are you improving, obviously that's a lot better. You know, when an earthquake hits and my house falls down, well, I know I could actually rebuild it myself if I wanted to.
Okay. You know? Okay.
you know, I also know I have the capacity to, you know, go do whatever I want with my life and rebuild it, get another one, whatever. I'm not hinging my sense of self-worth on, you know, what I believe others might think about me.
So if I can, so I can really get this in my brain here. My self-worth is based some on what other people think of me. People say, hey, you've got a great radio voice.
Yeah, okay? Understanding of what other people think of you.
My understanding of what they think of me. Yeah. Okay. It's also based upon maybe some acknowledgments, some titles. Maybe it's the title I have as a master certified coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
It could be the title I have as a vice president of a company or something. And
yeah.
The risk there is, to the extent that all of my value is built up on those things, when I lose them, which really I have not lost anything, but when they go away, then all of a sudden I'm lost as to what my value is.
Yeah.
Is this what we're getting to?
That's kind of what we're getting to. And another problem with the usual, someone's usual sense of self-esteem is it's, now there's two tendencies, and they're kind of controlled unconsciously, but people with high self-esteem, which is why people seek high self-esteem, tend to blow off problems. They tend to say, well, you know, I fell when I walked down the hallway, but look at the carpet. You know, so would you have. You know, of course that happened.
Yeah.
Someone with low self-esteem is going to be a little bit more inwardly focused and thinking, oh my God, only I would have tripped over the carpet. Like, how did I not see that?
You know? I've heard that voice in my head sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a good balance to have in the middle. Now, if you understand yourself and you have good self-concept clarity, you know who you are, you know what you're capable of, you understand, if I go try to, you know, jump over this wall down the hallway, I'm probably not going to make it. When you hit the top and fall over it, you don't feel like an idiot. You're not horribly embarrassed. It's like, well, I already knew I wasn't going to make it. I was just going to try it.
Yeah.
You know, if you have some inflated sense of self-esteem where you can do anything, you know, you always got the best whatever, everybody loves you, and you have no idea if you can jump over the wall, but for some reason you think you do because you can do anything, and you go and do the same thing and hit the thing and fall over the other side, well, either you're going to be crushed by that happening because you had no idea, or worse still, the tendency is you're going to blame the wall. You're not going to learn anything about what your capabilities are, and you're just going to be like, well, you know, someone built the wall a little bit wrong, and that's why I caught my, you know, shoe on it, and this wouldn't have happened, you know, otherwise. You know, people with, you know, that don't have a high value sense of self-esteem, or possibly, maybe a little bit, not lost, but just not learning everything they could, not getting the value out of every experience that they could. You know, some experiences are incredibly hard to get a value out of anyway. Like, you know, the podcast I did before that I said, it seemed like it went terrible and I should, you know, pay attention a little bit the week coming up to this, you know, appearance. So I don't feel that way when I leave here. It was easy to learn from that because it didn't go great. So let's say I came over here and said, hey, David, great to be on your show. And you're looking at me like, it's not David. You know, it's easy for me to learn because it's a mistake.
Yeah.
And it's corrected and it's obvious something's wrong. The problem is, how do you learn from doing it right? Like, if I say, hey, Doug, whatever, do I get motivated to learn, like, why is your name valuable to you? How did that actually make you feel to get your name right? You know, to call you by your name instead of, hey, dude. People tend not to learn from success. So if you have like an overinflated sense of self-esteem and success and you're ignoring all your failures and attributing them to the wall was built wrong or who, you know, I tripped because the carpet was mounted up or whatever, you're not nearly going to be learning what you should. You're going to find yourself probably at a point where people who do have a higher value sense of self-esteem that's based on, hey, I really know exactly what I'm capable of, and I know I have to warn you when I come on the show that I might ramble or I know whatever. Those people are going to be trying a little bit harder, be a little more self-aware, have worked on things a little harder, and they're going to pass up the guy who was thinking, oh, I'm great at this. I don't need to worry about.
So this development of my my self-esteem.
Yeah.
Needs to be based, it seems to be, on a couple of things. One, it needs to be based on truth. What am I really capable of doing?
Right.
Be honest with myself. It needs to be based upon some introspection, some awareness of what is going on with me, not just an awareness of what somebody else is saying.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really kind of being able to reflect on yourself fully. And understand, see, at a point here where I was trying from a young age to get away from my super external locus of control, which is kind of, for anybody who doesn't know that term, kind of what part I play in what happens in my life. An external locus of control is whatever happens to me in my life, I'm attributing elsewhere.
Okay.
In internal locus of control, whatever happens in my life, I'm in control of.
Taking responsibility for your own actions.
Okay. So you consult any, you know, psychological journal or anything, there, the wide report the world over is going to be those with the internal locus of control are more successful in careers and school and life in general. And you can kind of guess the obviousness of why that is. If I think I got a bad grade because I didn't study and I study more next time, they're going to get better. If I think I got a bad grade because my teacher's a jerk, then
nothing changes.
You know, I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that this really, and that's what fascinates me about it, it ties into but is a different language than what coaches are using today. So in the coaching arena, we talk about mirroring back to the client what they're saying or what they're doing so they can, because so often they don't see it.
Right.
So we mirror it back. Now they see it when I say it. It's like, I said that, Doug?
Yeah.
So that mirroring back creates a high level or higher level of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And then there is also the, you know, for lack of a better term, the accountability or the honesty factor, where we are not just being best friends with a client, saying, oh, yeah, you're great, Mike. You're the best writer I've ever read. It's like, you know, Mike, you're okay, yeah, but you know, you didn't leave me hanging on the cliff. I haven't read your book yet. I will. But so I can see how this ties into the coaching field.
Yeah.
In fact, it becomes very integral, and especially in some kinds of coaching where we're working with people who come to us because they've lost their job or they've had some major change in their life, a spouse or whatever, and all of a sudden what they were clinging to as their identity is gone.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically what the coach is doing, and one of the things that draws me to it is I'm helping people be reflective.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of going to repeat back to me what I say, and as that's your job as a coach to get me to recognize, like, oh yeah, that's probably not quite right. Or, you know, what I was talking about is thinking in my head, oh yeah, that's not quite right. Or maybe that's not all my fault or whatever. Just accounting for things and how they really occurred. You know, what really was your role in this success or this failure or whatever. I think kind of an interesting topic, like, as far as self-awareness goes, like client self-awareness or just awareness on an individual level, besides understanding your weaknesses, I'm kind of a big fan of strength-based coaching.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah,
great.
I think it sounds so good and sounds easy. People don't realize kind of how complicated it is, really. It's probably much harder to know what your strengths are than your weaknesses. Because, you know, like we talked about, if I, you know, call you by the wrong name, I get an instant correction.
Right.
You know, I'm well aware of it. If I call you by the right name, it's like, I never think of it again. So, I put a blog post up maybe last year on my blog about how hard it is to learn from success. And you have to think about it hard, and it took me a long time to get to where I thought hard enough about it to learn enough to write a post about it. But we went and did a client interview, you know, a presentation for a new project.
Okay.
Me and my little team and one of our executives, and when we left, it was like, you will never get that job. You guys failed miserably. Like, it was like, wow, I'm about to learn a lot from my failure. And I'm about to learn what all my weaknesses are. And as it turns out, the exact opposite happened. Like, we got the job. And right away, as you would expect with anything that goes well, I was like, yes, we are that good. I'm awesome. And as we got into the project,
with no analysis of why.
Exactly. As we got into the project, you know, I heard a few like, yeah, we got the job because of you. And like, I was probably the one most harshly criticized, which as it turns out was all the correct criticism. But at the time of the success, it was just like, I don't need to worry at all about, you know, whatever I did wrong, because obviously I did everything perfect. So it's really hard to learn, like, what, you know, what you're good at when you're just, it's harder the more successful you are, I think. Yeah. Now, it probably isn't going to seem that way because you're going to have kind of a pattern of and be kind of habituated to doing things that are going to lead you to success. But when you're trying to improve, it's easy to pick apart your weaknesses. It's harder to pick apart your strengths because, yeah, it's just harder to recognize them.
Well, and I think it also has something to do with the fact the term unconsciously competent.
Yeah.
You know, we don't analyze why we were successful.
Right.
And therefore, as you point out, we don't learn from it. And if we would analyze why, we could then build on and go, well, if I'm successful by doing this, what more could I do to be more successful?
Yeah, like that's the difference between like the star athlete and, you know, the whoever athlete, like, or someone that kind of grows a little bit older and kind of loses their athleticism. Like, they were a little bit bigger and stronger when they were a kid, and then they got to the next level, and now they're just whoever. But the people who are pressing on are like,
I won that race, but could I have beat my own personal best if I would have got another 10 minutes of sleep, or if I wouldn't have stressed myself out this way or that way, or drank a little more water or a little less? Or, you know, the ones who are really separating themselves are analyzing their success just like they analyze their failure.
And you know what we're talking about for many people is just the opposite is so ingrained in them. Yeah. You know, I had a new client the other day. A client asked me to come in and review the DISC report, the communication style analysis that we did on a new employee. And he said, would you come in and go over it with her and sort of explain to her what it says and let her see what her communication style is? And I did, and I went through it with her. And it was a pretty normal report. And when I got done, she says, oh, I love this. I'm going to go home. And now that I know all my weaknesses, I'm going to really work on this. And I said, wait, that's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
What if you looked at the things you're strong in, that you're doing well? A little effort on those would produce more results than you trying to work on things you're just not naturally competent in.
Right.
And she couldn't even... It was hard for her to grasp it at first.
Yeah.
The hardest part about even knowing what your strengths are is, like, you know, besides that she's completely conditioned herself to be like, don't fire me, I'm going to go work on this.
Yeah.
All this stuff I'm doing wrong.
Good intentions.
Yeah. But, yeah, she would be way more successful doing what she likes for one principle, or what she's good at for one principal reason. People like what they're good at.
Yeah.
Like, you like doing the radio show, right?
I love doing the radio show. You'd think I'd be good at it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're going to keep doing it because you like it, so you'll get better and better. It'll
okay,
work out.
Thank you.
But yeah, like, people who are good at playing the guitar, you're never going to talk to one of them. They're going to say, yeah, my parents made me do this. I can't believe I got pinholed in this, you know, career. I hate the guitar. know? Stevie Ray Vaughan never said that. You know, nobody's ever going to think like that. It's what you're good at, you enjoy doing, you get better and better and better at it. That's kind of why I like strengths-based coaching.
Yeah.
Like, don't always focus continuously on everything you're terrible at and try to, like, you know, I'm gonna try to do a little bit better. Man, I suck at this. First of all, you're gonna suck at it more because you're thinking how bad you are at it. It's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. We're filled with self-fulfilling prophecies. Like, anything you think you can or can't do, you know, you're right. I don't know. I forget where that came from. Henry Ford or somebody.
I've read it too. I don't know where.
It's very true. You don't want to be always focused negative, and you don't want to be overly always focused positive. But it's, you know, just speaking of the guitar, like, I picked up a guitar at first probably when I was 15. I was, as everybody, terrible at it. And so did I keep practicing and get better? No. I put it in the garage after like a day, and then I tried it again a couple months, and I was like, wow, I have no idea what's happening with this thing, and just put it away for 10 years. And then, I've someone finally showed me how to, you know, pick a string right or whatever. And then I got a little more interest. I was like, hey, maybe I can do this. And I got a little bit better and better at it, and it's more and more fun. And now I'm still a terrible guitar player, but I can competently get through a couple of songs, and it's super enjoyable. And I don't even have to try to get better, because I go home and pick it up and start playing
for personal pleasure, not because somebody's telling you you're great.
Yeah, exactly. And it's probably not entirely true how people say to master something you need 10,000 hours in it. And in fact, I wouldn't say it's even partly true. It depends on what domain it is, if it's one of your strengths or weaknesses or whatever. But just doing something over and over again, obviously you're going to get better.
Well, you're going to get you're going to become perfect at whatever you're doing, which could be doing it wrong.
Yeah, that too.
Whatever.
That too. It's like the thing is, like, that's where coaching comes in too. Like, hey, a little tweak here and a little tweak there. But it's never going to be like, come on, man, just please try one more time. You're never going to have to, you know, spend 10 minutes trying to convince somebody to do something they really like doing, even if they like doing it wrong.
Mike, this has really been fascinating. I can't wait to read your dissertation when it's done, your next book when it's done. I think you could have a huge impact on the business world and how we are so performance-based and maybe some changes. And, of course, the emphasis on strength-based coaching.
That's there how we go. I say it, too.
is something we all believe in, but could use a lot of emphasis. As we get ready to wrap up here, anything you want to say before we wrap up? Any last words?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. Okay, so why don't you ask me something?
All right. So, number one, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, people can get in touch with me by email at bizpsychologist@gmail.com.
Okay, what's the email address?
bizpsychologist@gmail.com.
All right.
People can also get a hold of me through my blog, which has links to social media, and it's volition1.com.
Volition One.
Volitiont, yeah.
Volitiont. Spell that out.
V-O-L-I-T-I-E-N-T 1.
Okay.
.com.
.com.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's a blog. You'll find a lot of my silly thoughts on that. On that blog, most of them are about psychology and about my own experience and my perceptions of my experiences, having studied psychology and done whatever I've done. It gives me a little bit, hopefully, better view than I would have just wandering from experience to experience.
Okay.
And sometimes I think it's helpful, so I write about it.
Well, look, I don't know whether to tell you thank you and you did great, because your value isn't based on what I think, based on what you're telling me. But I want to thank you for joining us today and becoming a member of the Coaching Perspective radio show community. Thank
Absolutely.
You very much for being with us.
My pleasure. It's fun.
For our audience, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some other great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for interesting coaches or CEOs or HR professionals to interview. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. And this is Doug Gefeller. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today. I hope that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and insights into yourself, as Mike says, and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.